This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Plunkett. I'm the host of the show. The show is called Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm every Tuesday between 1 and 2 on AM 1160 WVNJ over here, broadcast out of Oakland, New Jersey. It shoots up to the Westchester, over to New York, out to the island, little parts of central Jersey. Got a good listenership, good demographic area. Like I said, Disaster Recovery Hour. What is the Disaster Recovery Hour? It's a preparedness show and reporting about disasters. So if you just first-time listeners, I'm in the field of emergency services on the property side. I handle after fires and floods and structural issues and collapses or things like that, or wind damage and anything Mother Nature can throw at you, and also the human element with the vandalism and all those kind of types of crazy stuff. I've been in the business a long time. I'm a fortunate individual that I found an industry that I have a lot of passion for, and I enjoy going to work every day, because at the end of the day, it's again, could be a bit of a romantic, but helping out people, getting their lives back together, whether it's somebody's home or somebody's business. And also on a larger scale, you know, like with helping downtown, or I went down to the earthquakes, the hurricanes down in Florida years ago, helping out your fellow citizens. But that's enough of that. Let's get into the meat of the show. Like I said, the show's about preparedness. And funny thing, I was getting my hair cut this morning, and the guy two chairs down was talking about the tsunami and the earthquake in Japan. And, you know, I kept my mouth shut. I wasn't about to, you know, guy's getting a haircut. You know, he's got his audience with his stylist, if you will. I don't go see a stylist. I see a barber. I don't have that much hair anymore. But so he was talking about, well, you know, we should, all our prayers should go out there, which I completely agree, to the people of Japan. But he said a phrase that we use here all the time: disaster preparedness. And so I started listening to him. And this is, you know, this is your average citizen. I found out what he does for a living. He's a banker. Seems like a good enough guy, I guess, if you will. But he talked about disaster preparedness, and I just listened to him talk, and it really dawned on me. Here's a smart guy. You know, he's in the banking field. He's got education, so on and so forth, and he's got no idea about disaster preparedness. And it's kind of shocking, because it comes on the heels of yesterday. I had a meeting with a contingency planning organization from New York and Long Island, and about making corporations, municipalities, even though they do have disaster plans in the on the books, if you will, but these are outside private industry people with past experience doing civic duty. Some, there's OEM guys, there's some FEMA guys. Well, again, they've all gone over to the other side of being in private industry. So these guys have a lot of experience. But talking about, you know, listen to this guy, it's really quite amazing. Then he talked about, you know, Japan was supposedly the ranked number one preparedness country on the planet, and I agree. I think they were. But then again, what are you doing with 30-foot size waves that stretch, you know, 9 miles wide? You know, I mean, how much preparedness can you do? Unless you're up in a helicopter or a plane, you know, what are you going to do? It's going to do what it's going to do. And but what do you do afterwards? You know, that's the key. That's where the preparedness part of it comes in. So it was enlightening to know that it's still out. You know, a lot of people are just not aware. And, you know, from where I'm from, you know, the Bergen County area, and they got them on the island. They got them all over the place. But they have those open nights down at the firehouses, and they want you to come in and check out the trucks, and, you know, get a hot dog, have some soda. But they're also there to teach a valuable lesson about being prepared. And I'm not saying a tsunami, you know, you can do anything about a tsunami, but the other, the floods and the fires and the smoke damage. You know, listen to some of these captains and lieutenants in the fire departments and chiefs. You know, there's a lot of good things you can pick up. You know, they have pamphlets. You can go to any firehouse, and they'll square you away with some information. To, you know, some of the small things that you can do. And It's one of the things I talk about, actually, when I go to my jobs and I say, well, do you have this in place, or what happened when the fire happened, or when the flood happened, you know, so the people in Little Falls or out of the Passaic River, the Ramapo River, this, you know, this past couple of weeks ago. And, you know, a lot of people just, they don't know, because, you know what, we're busy making a living. We're busy taking kids to games. We're, you know, moms and dads are split in different directions because there's so many activities, and you're driving them here, you're driving there, dropping off play dates. Play dates is actually the crazy, crazy term. You know, man, when I grew up, you went and played. You went outside, you played. It wasn't a play date. You know, I don't want my kids having play dates. But no, I'm just teasing. They do. So when I see, you know, this average guy talking about disaster preparedness, and it makes me, it's in one regard, you know, we're still not there, and the other regard, it gives me an opportunity to get back on the stump and preach about preparedness, and which is needed, you know. With that, you know, kind of springboards me right into the tsunami in Japan, them being prepared. Now, my guest today is Paul Faust. He's from 1-800-PREPARE, and his website is 800prepare.com. Paul's in the preparedness business. But before I get into that, he, you know, talking about California, he went up to California, but with the West Coast, you know, they were experiencing, I don't know if there was any actual damage that came over from the tsunami. I know they had some issues with the 6 and 7 foot high waves, I think that day. But they were monitoring the levels of radiation that were coming across the ocean. So there was a run on those iodine pills and the solution. Again, Paul's going to talk about that later. And it, you know, just kind of dawned on me that, you know, it takes these types of things to start to reevaluate it. And it's really, you know, I kind of try to put a silver lining in there, be a little positive on it. It's okay, this happened. What can we do the next time when it happens? So, I think it's opened our eyes, you know, internationally, it's opened our eyes, because the whole planet's a big, you know, it's really, when you think about it, it's an egg. There's cracks all over the place, and when it moves, it moves. So we'll dabble with that, with the tsunami thing and some of that preparedness out of it. But if you just joined us, I am Chris Plunkett, and this is a Disaster Recovery Hour every Tuesday, live between 1 and 2 here on AM 1160 WVNJ. If you want to go to the website, it's www.drhradio.net. There's also twitter.com/drhradio. That is twitter.com/drhradio. And also they have Facebook. It's facebook.com/drhradio, drhradio. So it's facebook.com/drhradio. I'm looking at Bill and Dave behind the glass there. Who, Eddie Scazzeri? That's the old fan thing. But, you know, get those social media vehicles out there, so you can check out the website. And also, there's a lot of stuff on the website that you can connect onto other websites with other people in my industry, and also consultants who do various things. There's the health end of it. There's the Red Cross part of it. There is, heck, you got Garden State Environmental, who I'm pretty friendly with. They're industrial hygienists, you know, mold and airborne qualities and IHQs and all the rest of that stuff. You can check that on their website. So, you know, if you want to check out the website, it's got a lot of good information, good intel out there that you can absorb. So I do say so a lot, so bear with me. So with that, getting back to Japan being prepared. I got a slew of questions for Paul and Paul Faust, coming back from California. That's the closest, obviously, besides Hawaii, with the mass population of American citizens who could be affected by the tsunami and the fallout from the contamination of the radiation. Just a couple of things, again, that this has reopen some other doors for me regarding being prepared. There's the family part of it. I have it on my website. I talk about it when I enter people's homes, about some of the things that you could have, you know, in your home, for if a disaster does happen, you know, and so it's basically, you know, you want to be prepared. Even, you know, you want to stock up and get, you know, educate the kids, educate your husband. You know, there's also the pets. There's also a lot of mother-daughter type of homes in the in our region, the metropolitan area, where, you know, an elderly parent is living with us. You know, they have to be part of the emergency plan also of evacuation and staging and. And you know, it comes down to it, they're real simple things to have in play. You don't need to do it all day on a weekend. You know, take this weekend, take an hour and say, you know what, let me get some emergency phone numbers down. So you go with a couple of aunts and uncles. Obviously, it's a simple one of 911. That's not really an emergency number to write down. It should be embedded in your head. But you should have an electrician, you know, the family electrician who handles that stuff, and you're also your plumber, but also your doctor's phone numbers, you know, and also your medication amounts. That should be in your wallet or in your purse. If something happens, you're displaced, the house you have a tragedy or disaster at your home, and your medication, you don't have the counts, or more so, worse even yet is the kids. You know, the kids aren't going to know their milligrams per their pills and so on and so forth. So those are the kinds of things that if you had in place when you got out of the house, you don't have to say, oh, what, God, I don't have this and I don't have that. Spend a little time. You'll when you get done after the disaster has happened, and you're sitting there in your front yard, and you're saying, geez, what happens now? You have so many things in place. Paul Faust is going to be my guest. He's coming up in a couple seconds. Let's go to a station break and get right into it, because he's a jacked up individual when it comes to preparedness.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
And welcome back to Disaster Recovery Hour. This is the WVNJ, AM 1160. I got Skyping in a buddy of mine, Paul Fouts. He's from 1-800-PREPARE. And what I was talking about with the tsunami and the earthquake at the beginning of our show today, with that other story I was telling you about. Paul is in the preparedness business. Paul was a volunteer fireman up here in the Westchester area, and also certified also. And So Paul just got back from the West Coast, because the West Coast was experiencing some of those, whether they're psychological or physical side effects from the tsunami and the earthquake. And so, Paul, how you doing, bud?
I'm very good, sir. Thanks for having me on again.
No problem. So why don't you pick up from day one? Paul went out there with the intentions of doing some educating, talking to some people. They also have preparedness kits. And so, Paul, why don't you just tell the listeners what you have and how those things went out?
Well, yeah, I mean, even though, what happened in Japan was very far away, it had a deep kind of psychological effect on people in this country, and especially in the West Coast. I think it was a huge wake-up call to people that these things happen. They can happen suddenly, and they can bring on, a disaster is much worse than we would envision. And I think not the first time, but I think this one was the real catalyst to get people to really start acting. You hate to see something like this happen, but you can't control it happen. And hopefully now more and more people are taking that pause and saying, what can I do? What should I do? And so we've been very, very busy both trying to educate, trying to relay fears, and trying to guide people in the direction they should be taking, some of the steps they should be taking. Again, I've said it before in the show, it's not about panicking. We don't want people, we spend a lot more time laying fears, but we want them to take action.
Yeah. You're not going to prevent the tsunami. You're not going to prevent the earthquake. If you could, you'd be Superman and be another good movie. But the preparedness end of it, what some of the meetings you guys partaked in? Was it municipality wise, city wise? Was it private industry? What was some of those meetings like?
Most of it was individual citizens. Some of it was with corporations. Wasn't the municipality or government level? Although we did receive calls from government groups and municipalities. But most of the people we actually spoke to were concerned citizens, community groups, and corporations, both in person and on the phone. And a lot of them, most of them were domestic, although we did, talk to a lot of companies that have offices in Japan, many of which weren't affected by the recent disaster, but want to make sure that their staff, their people are prepared because there's continuing earthquakes. We had another one recently over there, and then they want to, so it's been both domestic and abroad that we've been kind of consulting, working with people, and getting them what they need.
It's on size-wise, what would be, because out of all the news that was put out over here on our side, on the East Coast, the size of the affected area, I didn't see any, how you like to have building blocks, okay? Here's a square one, here's a square one, put them together. What was the size of the, it's really secondary damage when it comes to an earthquake, because that's what a tsunami is, secondary damage. On an East Coast side, what would that encompass? Like all of Long Island would have been wiped out, or like Long Beach Island down the Jersey Shore? What was the consensus?
That's a great question. I really don't know the answer to it. I think there's a couple different. It's not only the size of the area that might have been wiped out or affected, but then you also take the areas that weren't necessarily wiped out and affected, and you pour a lot of people into those areas that might not have been injured or lost during this disaster, but now they flooded into communities, flooded into unaffected areas, and now you've got a different kind of disaster. You've got a disaster of housing, you've got a disaster of food and water, you've got a disaster of medicine. So, you get the psychological disasters. So it really affects a much broader range than the actual physical damage.
Well, it's almost like being a refugee in your own country.
A refugee in your own country with often no money, nowhere to go, and unbelievable emergency response systems that are just overwhelmed. Right. Again, we've talked about that on your show before. But the response personnel around the world in many countries are great. They have lots of equipment. They have great people who are willing to put themselves at great risk. But they can't take care of everybody all the time at once. And often we find, and we found it here, they can't get to everybody, and they have to prioritize. And that's one of the keys. And while we preach, preparedness at your own level and being your own first responder, mm-hmm. That's critical, because good people with great intentions can't always get to you.
Right, right. I was thinking about what you and I talked about on some of the previous times we've had meetings and on radio wise. you have to take care of your own house per se until the cavalry shows up. So when Japan being ranked number one in the world, as they say, for disaster preparedness and plans, I mean it's a rocky island, the whole entire country. And I was thinking about, you know, the nuclear plant that sits right on the coast. Now, on the west coast of the United States, you have a lot of those desalinization plants. I mean, they're right in the way of a tsunami hit. So did you guys talk anything about, because what you were just talking about is the infrastructure and people coming over and flooding a particular zone is not enough housing. The electronics are down, power is down. You can't get money out. So did you guys see any evidence, or did you come across any evidence on the California side with those desalinization plants? What's their preparedness, or is there anything in play?
No, we didn't get involved or meet or discuss it in that, because it's not really our role. But it's been something we've known and it's been talked about around this country. Is that, you know, we built a lot of things in this country without disaster preparedness in mind. We've built plants on fault zones. We've, you know, built gas and facilities near cities. Companies continue to preach preparedness. Yet when we build new hospitals and new critical infrastructure, we're putting generators and computer equipment in basements. So, you know, it's one of these culture shifts that has to happen. And while I haven't, our real role at 1-800-PREPARE.com, you know, we want to educate, we also sell preparedness kits and supplies. And we haven't, we're not at the level or in the position to be consulting on, hey, let's take a critical look. I think that because of disasters like this, government groups and local watchdog groups are now putting more pressure on these facilities to really take a look at their plans, what they were built to withstand, and how are we going to react if we do lose some of them.
Yeah. This is if you just join us, it's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 on the AM 1160 WVNJ. I'm speaking with Paul Faust. Paul and I are in the disaster business together. He's on the more of the preparedness side, and I'm more in the educational side doing the radio. I mean, I physically do it also, but Paul is an owner of 1-800-PREPARE. If you go on Twitter, he's got contacts on there that you can grab. It's for the Twitter sites. It's twitter.com/drhradio. That's twitter.com/drhradio. And also on Facebook. And that's the same formula. It's facebook.com/drhradio. Again, it's facebook.com/drhradio. So, Paul, with the kits, and let's talk about the kits. We've talked about it before, but we talked about it here on the East Coast end of it. What would be... What's the kits what do they personalize, if you will, for the West Coast? What's entailed there?
Well, I think the basics of kits, which, you know, the government, we recommend are these 72 hours, being able to be self-sufficient for 72 hours. The kits generally, East Coast, West Coast, they start out the same. You need to have the same items. And again, we sell ready-made kits. We also sell, you know, individual items that go into kits. And we're talking about the basics. We're talking about food and water. We're talking about basic first aid. We're talking about light. We're talking about warmth, maybe a rain poncho, thermal blankets. You're talking about a positive water purification. Some basic tools, maybe rope. In certain situations where it could be an earthquake, you know, you want maybe light sticks where you don't have to strike matches because you have to worry about, you know, gas rupture. In the West Coast, you also might want to talk about some kind of pry bar in case there is a collapse. What I always recommend to people is the kits we sell and others sell. It's not the end. It's not everything. It's a start. It's the basics. Then you need to take a look at your own situation and add things to your kits that are more specific to you. That could mean certain prescriptions, certain comfort items that you might want. Certainly, I recommend cash, because in a disaster, in power outages, you might not have access to ATMs and money. So putting things like that in there. So each situation is different. The real key to a kit is, here's the basics. You've got it. It's in one spot, and it's there for the disaster. It's not, you know, it's not running around the home saying, "Well, I have that, I have that, I have it," and finding it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
grab and go. And that's really what we preach to everybody. And my mission and my goal and my hope is that in the future, in the near future, everyone will have one in their home for their family members, in their vehicles, and in their offices. It's a small investment that gives peace of mind and certainly safety.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're going to go to a break, but when we get back, Paul, it's, I want to, you know, the people on the West, on the East Coast, they don't really know what these iodine capsules, I shouldn't say they don't know, but there's not as much information. Like when you went out there and you're talking to the people, and I know you brought out some supplies, so let's go to a station break. It is a disaster recovery hour. I am your host, I think I am today, at least, Chris Plunkett, and we'll go to a break, and Paul and I will pick up where we left off.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, their seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition.
Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next?
Fire, smoke, water, or mold, CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, they've got answers. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Back from station break, disaster recovery. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, still on the phone with Paul Faust. Paul is the owner of 1-800-PREPARE. Paul went to the West Coast, just got back recently, and he and I been talking about disaster, these preparedness kits for a couple of months. And so, Paul, iodine capsules. Let's get that out there, because I know some of the people on this side don't understand really how that really works. Give me some background on that. And how do you implement that? Is it like over the counter kind of stuff? I mean, tell me how that goes.
Oh yeah, and let me preface this with, you know, that I am not a pharmacist.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not a regular. You know, potassium iodide is an item recommended that the manufacturers, and they say, you know, provides protection from the absorption of radioactive iodine into the body, and this is, you know, this is in, through the thyroid, which, you know, tends to be the biggest problem, if, you know, surviving a nuclear leak, you know, is this radioactive iodine getting into your thyroid. And taking potassium iodide will block that, or is supposed to help completely block that absorption. Now, very important for people to know is that taking it when you don't need it does not provide protection. It could also be very harmful. There are side effects. So just buying it and taking it because you hear a news story that there might be some leak or contamination is not what to do. And there's, you know, there's a lot of talking heads on TV. You see, these are items that you would only take if instructed to do so by the Center for Disease Control, FEMA, you know, your local governments. If they say to take it is when you would want to take it. And if I was going to take it, this is my own personal recommendation, they're FDA approved products on the market. One is called Iosat. One is called ThyroShield. I believe Iosat's the only pill that's FDA approved, and ThyroShield is the only liquid that is approved. We sell them both on our website. And they just provide that, you know, that peace of mind, something to have. So that was the big panic with Japan, and I would try and tell people, look, I don't think we're going to need to take in this country because of it, but do I think it's something it's nice to have in the house for peace of mind? Yes, I don't want to go scrambling for it when I don't have it and trying to buy it, because as we saw from the disaster, the stocks in this country were wiped out instantly.
Mm, right. So, go on.
No, please go ahead.
We were at break, we talked about you met up with the guys out there that you're in business with the kits themselves and making them, correct?
Yes, sir.
So,
yeah, that's
so good. You were talking about all of a sudden, okay, there's a just like there's a run on the on these pills or the liquid, there could be a run on kits, but yet you could be in a zone that your manufacturing is in the hot zone. It's in the fallout zone, right? So you guys were talking about that. Tell us that story.
Yeah, we actually being in the preparedness business, you almost get embarrassed when you get caught off guard because we're supposed to be prepared.
Right.
And this disaster was really a disaster for us. I mean, we've been preaching, get a kit, make a plan, be informed, echoing what the government says. Get a kit. We just never figured that everyone was going to want them the same day. So, when something happens and all of a sudden, oh my God, everybody's now listening to the message. Our site's getting bombarded. Phones are ringing off the hook. And no one was prepared for it on our end.
Yeah.
So it's, not enough staff, not enough raw materials, not enough backpacks, not enough hours in the day to pack them. Then the materials, the raw supplies, emergency food and water ran out. People bought lots of stock of those.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to actually go sit and put together our own disaster plan that if, God forbid, we see another sudden disaster and if there is a run on products, where's our plan to pull off the shelf, to bring in immediate staff, to get new supplies, to get secondary warehousing, to get more and more supplies out to people as quickly as we can. So we learned some valuable lessons and are in the middle of implementing our own emergency response plans to get people their emergency response kits.
Yeah, that's...
When people panic, they just want help that moment. Most people have understood the situation, have been patient, but when people are afraid, people are nervous, they're worried about protecting their families, it's a very emotional, it's psychological, and so we need to be there for them. And so we, it's caused us to take a new look at our procedures and plans.
Now, is the kits manufactured and produced just out there, or you have other facilities that you guys are in business with?
We have more than one facility and more than one location. Again, that's something been talked about. But there's also the different supplies that go into different kits come from different parts of the world. And, some of the items could be emergency sourced overnight. Some items can't be. So that puts you in a position of long-term logistical planning with multiple suppliers at different time levels. So you can really be on the ball to do the best you can. And, we're talking to the experts that we work with and logistic experts and location experts to just set ourselves up to try and be the best resource we can be to our clients when they need us. The real hope is that we people start preparing now in waves, so it's not, the same day.
Yeah, I would imagine, Japan's one of their many big problems would be logistics because the infrastructure, the roads, the railways are in that part of the country are just smashed. So it's kind of going, you can't go from point C because there is no point B to go through. It was very similar with the guys that I had on the show, Paul Wagner and Paul Sebring from MMRC, one's with Haiti and one's with the MMRC Global. But they found a niche within the medical community after the earthquake down in Haiti that they were able to navigate the city and then the outlying villages, and the biggest thing that they became a hot commodity because they were logistics. Grant you, a doctor's all good and medical supplies are great to have, but if you can't get them to the point of impact, where are you?
I think that's a critical component and not of what we do, of what governments do, municipalities do, both in this country and abroad, and other companies, and how can we quickly get new infrastructure in? How can we quickly get communication lines in? How can we quickly get water in? One of our board directors on our board of advisors, General Russell Honore, and he preaches those kind of things. Some cities have unbelievable evacuation plans to get people out of the city, but they don't have great plans to evacuate critical personnel to certain locations where once the disaster's over, we can immediately get those people back in to get the phone lines running, to get the water placement and waste, sewer systems back up, to get the fire departments back up and running. And that's critical, because the quicker we get those running, the quicker we can start dealing, the quicker we can get hospitals open, we can get medical supplies flowing. And that's just a matter of simply changing the culture here and abroad in terms of being ready to deal with these situations. And I think that we've missed, and we're getting better at it, but it needs to take a big leap forward across the world, because otherwise we're going to keep getting caught and then scrambling.
Yeah. I mean, they had a big NYPD just had a big drill this past Thursday and Friday, and the PA announcement through the news and so on and so forth was saying, don't panic, it's a drill. And these are the kinds of things, that's man hours and that's money. And one of the things I always thought about with 9/11 was, again, this is my opinion as an American citizen, I'm entitled to have one, is if we had Homeland Security, we had all this money to prevent these types of things, that would have been great. But you know what? And again, this is my opinion in this country, that we don't look down that far the road. And that's why I think this preparedness thing, and I think you're on top of the game. I'm really getting driven into this whole industry because I'm in the emergency side of it with property, with fires and floods. I mean, I don't know if you agree or not with that, but
No, I do. I agree completely. I think that, I'm a member of emergency response personnel as a volunteer firefighter, and we have great personnel trained very well. The facts are there, and again, some of them are facts, some of them are my opinions, that the cost to prepare is a lot less than the cost of recovery after, by a significant fold to taxpayers. However, there has been, and I've read some articles about it, I'm not claiming to be an expert, I haven't done my own studies, but there's been some interesting studies that show the lift to political parties and candidates for those who react well to a disaster afterwards and ride into the rescue, and they're lifting the polls and their positions, and not a lift to the ones who spend money in preparedness. So is there a preparedness disincentive? I don't know. I have to learn more about it. I think we're seeing some changes, but it's a very telling number. And if we understand that the cost to prepare is a lot less, both in terms of dollars and, loss of life, we need to be looking at it.
Yeah. And like we've talked about many times before, American citizens leaning on the government. It is an opinion, but I'm pretty sure it's factual. We just can't sit there and wait for them to come and take care of us. We're going to go to a break. Paul and I will finish up the show and also give contacts and talk about, we'll just dab a little bit in the kits and one more time. And let's go to a break, pick up bills. That's about it. Welcome back. It's the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, at AM 1160 WVNJ. Paul and I before we went to the break, we were talking about, the dollars and cents, or some of the things we were talking about, but one of the last words were, how much does it cost to prepare for a disaster, and then how much does it cost the country to not be prepared, and when the disaster happens. I had Charles Montabe, who is a Red Cross case manager up here in the Bergen County area in Jersey, and it's like a 1 to 9 kind of a cost to spend on preparedness, opposed to when the disaster hits like Katrina, and then everybody, the proverbial, you know what, hits the fan, and we're spending billions of dollars instead of hundreds of millions, which is a big number. So with that, and Paul was coming in from the West Coast talking about the earthquake too. So Paul, regarding some of those kits, and you do, you're preaching preparedness. What are some of the overriding factor you saw? Now, that was there a lot of hype on the West Coast, or was it really practical? Saying, listen, this is what we need to do, or is it really sensationalized?
Look, I think it was both. I think there was, you know, I think there was a lot of hype and a lot of, you know, look, the press needs to get people to watch, and so they, you know, they put out different stories. There's radiation in the water, you know, and there's a little bit of hype, but I didn't mind it as much because it got people to start thinking. It got people to start looking, you know, both at my website and others. Hey, what should I be doing? At least asking the questions. And now we're seeing both individual citizens and companies saying, okay, let's reset. Let's look at how we can protect our staffs. Let's look at the things we should have, both the items, you know, again, that we sell at 1-800-PREPARE.com, but also their computers, their backup storage, their offsite, where could we congregate to? I mean, all those things, if a little bit of hype kind of emphasizes the point, I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. I'm not okay with, you know, causing abject panic, but, you know, we've got to get the point across. And people can't hear it and then just forget about it in 5 minutes and go back to their latte. So, you know, it is okay to get people, you know, to act. So I was all right with it. And you know, talking to people and telling, look, it's not about panic. It's about taking where you are right now and taking a couple steps. And they're easy steps. And we've done them before. And then take a little more step. And then you'll be there. You know, you'll be in a much better position in a few weeks, in a few months than you are today.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, if we Rodero Drive, we get some of those kits out there, we could make them pink with some rhinestones on them. Maybe they'll find them in vogue, but yet they'll be practical.
Yeah, if we can make them, you know, we can make them cool, put them on some celebrities, you know, and you'll see people carrying them out to the bars with them, you know. Maybe we need to make them hip.
Yeah. You know, for me, it always comes back to when downtown with 9/11 was, you have the physicals, the paperwork, the computers and stuff. But you know what? Overriding the largest asset you have as a business owner is your employees. So, you know, losing a lot of employees downtown, you know, they're human beings, but they're also part of they're an asset to a company. Contingency plannings for these companies, they have IT backup. But, you know, the kits would be a bonus to have on site in the building, you know, because these people need to run your business. So
yeah, look, I responded downtown during 9/11, and you know, and as did my partner was in the towers the first time there's an explosion, and you know, I could tell you that what somebody would have, what an employee would have liked to have had, that had a dust mask, a flashlight, maybe a whistle, some water to wipe their eyes, to get a drink. You know, we give out to our employees so many things, a wireless mouse pad, wireless keyboards, you know, lunch rooms, break rooms. What's more important than telling your employees, hey, look, we care about you. We want you to have this. The odds are you're never going to need it. But it's such a small cost to give employees peace of mind and give people something, some tool that, you know, look, in certain situations, I don't care what you give them, it's not going to help. But the more we give them, the more, you know, they can not panic. They can react. They can at least have something to do and kind of take take some action, mm-hmm. as opposed to look around for someone else to take action for them. And I think it's a small cost for, you know, a company's most valuable asset, again, which is people. It says something to your people that, hey, we care, we're here, we want to do whatever we can for you. So I think I wish and hope that more companies, you know, look at it and consider it.
Yeah, you know, it's you know what, we have 401ks and we have some annuities for our and we and the the business owner puts into that, they're a human asset, and they're the driving force. Really, they're the ones who make the widgets, whether it's an electrical or a computer widget, or it's a manufacturing widget, whichever one. It's still a tangible asset that they need to produce. So if you're going to punch in some money into a 401, 401's no good if you have no company. So having those kits, and I met another person not too long ago. He's from New Jersey State Police, and we were talking about the kits for sporting events. It would be huge. I mean, because this whole thing, we're all generating dollars. We all have to make money. But when you can make money, but there's a good feeling to it. I don't know about you. Maybe I'm a romantic along those lines, that doing good is still a good thing out there. And that's why we're in the preparedness business. Paul, let's give some contacts that people can get a hold of. Definitely take a look at the website. The website's dynamite for different types of kits. And Paul, give a couple examples of how someone could either go right to the kit that has everything, or they can personalize their kit.
Yeah, again, our site is 1-800-PREPARE.com. It's also our phone number, 1-800-PREPARE. You can go to the site. You could look by category: home, office, school, car. You could look at different levels of kits when you go into different categories. Or you could search individual preparedness items. If you're one of those people that kind of wants to build your own kit item at a time, we have those sections. I also encourage people to go to the site. We have a resource section that we're growing. We're trying to put more and more articles on how to prepare, disaster checklist, things like that. We welcome suggestions. If there's things you don't see on our site, please let us know, and we'll work on them. If you're a company and you're looking for bulk orders or bulk items, give us a call. We could also do custom items. So if you don't see the exact kit you want, let us know. We could potentially build the kit that you want with the items you want and give you some guidance. Give it a look.
Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt, this is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, speaking with Paul Faust. Again, he's from 1-800-PREPARE, and also the website is 800prepare.com. Paul, thanks a lot. Appreciate you coming on the show again. People, if you can't get to Paul's website, or if you want to take a look at our website, there's a link to Paul's website. My website is cppems.com. And then there's the Twitter, which is twitter.com/drtrayradio. That is, I feel like public announcement, twitter.com/drhradio. And also the Facebook, which is facebook.com/drhradio. Paul, thanks a lot. I'll give you the heads up on that meeting we were talking about, and I appreciate it. And, talk to you probably in a couple weeks.
Thanks for having me again. Look forward to seeing you guys soon.
Take care. Bye-bye. Say thanks to Paul Faust. We've developed a good relationship. He's a little tired coming back from the West Coast. When I get him in the studio, he and I banter pretty good. It's a good volleying with my information, his information, the enthusiasm. Whereas, as De Niro said in what Goodfellas, enthusiasms or whatever the heck that was. But seriously, it is the show is about preparedness, and Paul is very much has a lot of passion. Being a volunteer fireman, that takes time and training and effort, and puts a strain on a man's family. That's for sure. I know some guys in town where I live who are volunteer firemen, and I respect the dickens out of these guys as well as the boys in blue. Wrap up the show. Another good show, and many more to come. We might be having a guest next week who's in country from Japan, who experienced the tsunami. That's still a little up in the air, but needless to say, we'll continue the preaching of being prepared and bringing in real life scenarios and how to. Describe the situation, and then what would be the best practices to further alleviate the damages, whether they're physical, property, or life. So with that said, we also have that major disaster that's happening internationally, and that's the wars. When Libya, against my show, my opinion, I mean, what are we doing here, people? We're stretched out thin as it is, and want to go into Libya? Give me a break. Let's wrap it up. Bring home the troops, and God bless the country. We'll see you next week. Thanks.